the simplicity of understanding it's like my job is to support the band and the artist and to make sure that the show runs smoothly every single time.
Welcome everybody to Nashville Drummers Podcast, episode 41.
We want to wish everyone a joyous holiday season. Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa for those celebrating. This will be our only episode this month, and we're closing out the year in a big way as we're excited to welcome our good friend Neil Yakupin to the podcast. Originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Neil is most notably the touring drummer for country star Nate Smith. And this interview took honestly a few months to schedule. Neil has had just a jam-packed year on and off the road. Of course, just announced they got added to the Morgan Wallen tour for 2024. And for anyone that knows Neil, he is one of the most genuine and nice guys to be around. Really enjoyed this conversation and learning his journey to Nashville and how he landed the gig as well as starting his own business.
Yeah, it was great meeting him for the first time. He's a champ and a great communicator, super easy to talk to. Like Dan said, it took us a long time to get this thing scheduled. It was like herding cats, and the cats were ourselves. And Neil, of course. But great fella, great player, fantastic conversation.
Yeah, and beyond his touring gig with Nate, Neil's also the co-founder, co-owner of Tour Launch, which is a really innovative, exciting company that he has here in Nashville, helping up-and-coming artists build their live shows, everything from hardware, playback rigs, helping to build sets in Ableton, and even to help put together bands for some of these artists. It was a pretty interesting discussion on the general state of the music industry.
For me, the most interesting part of the whole thing was talking to him about the performance coaching aspect of what he does and what his company offers. It seems to me that there are a lot of artists now who are blowing up on TikTok, and they have ability on their instrument and they have no experience playing in front of people. So it's important to have your show together when you get in front of a few hundred people.
We also began the conversation with an interesting discussion on general health and wellness practices for drummers, specifically hot saunas and cold plunge. And with that in mind, we are very excited to welcome a new sponsor of the show. We've partnered with a small business right here in Nashville that offers some really great services. And exclusively for listeners of the podcast, they've offered a special discount on the services. So stay tuned towards the beginning of the episode to find out more. Wishing everyone a happy holidays and a happy new year. Thank you to everyone that has supported the podcast in 2023. If you've enjoyed any of the episodes this past year, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram at Nashville Drummers Podcast. And you can buy merch at our website, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. We have a lot more interviews coming your way, so we'll see you in 2024.
Today, we're welcoming a new sponsor to the podcast, Lowboy Custom Beaters. These guys make the absolute best sounding, best feeling, and best looking bass drum beaters in the game.
Yeah, I bought my first Lowboy in 2016. It was a red and blue with white stripes, and I was able to design it and buy it right on their website, and Lowboy has been my go-to beater ever since. This thing feels and sounds great on any gig, and they just look even better.
One thing I really love about Lowboy is that you can customize the tone of your beater in addition to the look. Go with a wood striking surface for maximum attack, leather for a warm punch, felt if you want it a bit boomier, or lamb's wool for those felt but not heard kick drum tones. You can buy Lowboy beaters here in Nashville at Forks, Drum Supply, and Nelson Drum Shop. You can also demo all 8 beater models at Drumbox. Check them out at lowboybeaters.com. This has been a weirdly challenging, like getting all of our schedules aligned perfectly. And part of that is just like the nature of, I mean, our lives in general. And the other part of it is just the part of the year that we're sitting in.
But oh, yeah.
It's just, we're finally here, all three of us with no commitments.
We love that. Perfect. And I'm happy to be here, guys.
Dude, thanks so much.
We're so glad
this is. I feel like we have to reschedule people a lot, but yeah. That's, I guess, a good problem to have because we're all so busy.
Yeah. Oh, I feel
but
so bad. I feel like we bounce around.
It's been like six.
It's like a 6-month process at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of is.
We finally pinned down the day, though. It feels great. Maybe it's all supposed to happen exactly like this. We'll look at it.
It was
like
meant
that.
To be this day.
Today is it's a special day.
As it's getting colder and colder. Rocking the beanie.
Absolutely.
Well, we're stoked to have Neil Jakopin. Is that how you say your
last
name?
That's correct, yeah.
That's a pretty cool last name.
Yeah. Yugoslavian. I was about to say, we were talking about Scandinavia before. That kind of, we're like in a weird way brothers, you know, because we're, you know, somewhat close to each other.
Yeah. It's true.
But yeah.
There's probably.
I don't have that primal strength that I feel like you have, you know?
Yeah, but I also have this weird, like Neanderthal, like pain to rage response. If I get hurt, like, and it doesn't have to be by a person, it could just be anything. If I get like, I got my fingers smashed by a dude's guitar case.
That's when your strength
and
come out?
I have to do like this. Because the first thing I wanted to do was take his guitar case and throw it out of the window. I'm like, oh, my body just goes, that's an enemy that you need to kill. I'm like, oh, good. Goodbye. I kill your guitar case now.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to be super careful about what I say that today. No rage-inducing comments or moments.
Oh, the comments do not, it's just the physical experience of pain. Just like, like okay, I can be a human being, I promise. I'm just, anyway, what'd you have for breakfast today?
Yes. Great transition.
I feel like Dan, you on the other hand, are very, very calm.
We kind of, it's like good cop, bad
cop.
Like,
yeah, fire and ice a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So, what did you have for breakfast today?
What did I have for breakfast? I actually am not a huge breakfast guy, but when I do, hard boiled egg.
Ooh, just one?
Yeah. See, my wife's mother, she swears by it. Like longevity, everything. Hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it is a pure protein.
It is a pure protein.
So
you feel good. A little salt, a little pepper.
Okay. That was good. Okay. I was going to ask. Yeah, I got to get a little bit of sodium in the morning. That's important. Yeah. Are you on the electrolytes yet?
See, I'm a coffee, which I shouldn't do first thing, but as soon as I wake up, coffee.
Mm. Yep.
Got to be that.
Huberman suggests waiting 90 minutes.
I know. And you got to do the sunlight too. I'm the worst. Know, yeah. Pure darkness, coffee. Yep. I'm the opposite.
Jeez, man.
It's like the opposite.
Trying to hurt yourself.
Yeah, it's like by 11 o'clock, I'm like, where am I? You know, I just feel weird and dark. You know?
My goal is to need a nap before noon.
Yeah.
That's my goal. Dude, that's the hard one is the like getting outside. And like, especially now that it is kind of, especially in the morning, unpleasantly cold.
Cold.
I'm like, oh, man. And to do it, because like, yeah, go out there and ground. Could do it barefoot. I'm like, really?
Oh yeah,
my little toesies on that frozen grass.
I feel like of all people, you'd embrace that.
Did you just say
it's almost like tapping into your.
And when I'm in my best self, when I'm fully rested, I'm like, yeah, let's go. I've been so unrested in the last 6 months I feel like a big baby.
Yeah, I feel
you. I was gonna say, let it be known that Big Nate, Scandinavian, referred to his toes as little toesies.
Uh-huh. Little toesies.
My cute little toesies,
which
are actually
probably the most adorable
by the
thing
way.
You said on here.
Yeah. I have nasty feet. My little toes, my pinky toes, the nail doesn't do this. It grows like that.
Really?
Yeah, it's gross.
There might be a drumming advantage, too, because I've seen your foot technique. I feel like it's superior.
You're right. Yeah.
So maybe there's some weird aerodynamic thing that's happening in there. What a great way to start this podcast, too, huh?
I'd always
people are going to be like, I'm turning this off now.
Yeah, this is trash. How did I ever listen to these guys?
Skip. We were saying how busy we all are. Yeah, so you've had quite a year.
Man, it's been busy.
Give the people listening who may not know who you are, who you're playing with, and kind of what you've been up to.
Yeah, so Neil Jakopin, I play for Nate Smith, so he's a country artist.
Oh, not the drummer.
Not the drummer. Dude, people ask me all the time. I have disappointed so many people this year, because like I'll set up my drums side stage, and people come over and be like, dude, are you playing for Nate Smith? Also, where's his drum set at? I'm like, unfortunately not. You know?
Yeah.
And actually, there was a little bit of beef between the two.
Really?
What?
Yeah. So if you, it's a very short time, but Nate Smith, the drummer, apparently there was a little bit of infringement with the name, and people were commenting on Nate Smith, the drummer, about the Whiskey on You song.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he put up in his bio, he's like, Nate Smith. Not the country
I saw
singer.
That.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's a good sport about it, you know?
I didn't think it actually extended to like real life. I thought that was like an internet like meme almost.
Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So he is, Nate, the guy I play for, cannot really play the drums. He can sing. He can sing very well, but definitely not a drummer.
Yeah, he can't. He certainly can sing quite well.
Oh, he's got that great voice. Yeah.
You know, I was thinking what you should do is you should write your own solo record and hire Nate Smith, the drummer, to play drums for you. That would complete the circle.
Whoa, that's almost like you're playing 4D chess at this point. Exactly. Like that is.
You'll be the president before you even know it. Like, how did I get here? I didn't even want this.
Yeah, man, but it's been a fun year. We did a lot of shows. I think we did 110 or around that. So it was busy, you know, a lot of travel. But it was super fun. We've had about a week off now, so we feel so much better. You know, just that Thanksgiving break, sleeping in my own bed. I feel like a human again. Mm-hmm. It's great.
It's a good balance to come back for sure. Mm-hmm. We'll get into the backstory, of course, how you got the gig and all that. And but so you guys also got added to the Morgan Wallen 2024
next year
tour, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So it's exciting.
That's great. Dude, that's great.
So exciting. Yeah.
It's very exciting. Yeah. And it's, we got a little taste of it this year because we did two shows. Okay. And it was just so fun. You know, the crowd, I think it's just so engaging. And, you know, from start to finish, because we are going to be 2 of 4. So it's not like we're direct support or anything like that. But I think the crowd in general was so much fun. And I think we were lucky enough to get about 80% capacity. Mm-hmm. So in a big stadium like that, it just felt so alive, you know?
Yeah.
It was awesome, man. It was a great experience. So I'm very excited for next year.
Yeah. So I think May you guys are going to be at Nissan in Nashville.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
That's with Bailey Zimmerman and Lauren, right?
Yeah. And I have a ton of friends in the Bailey Zimmerman camp too. So that's going to be just like a big party. Dude, yeah. And Lauren Watkins so too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's great.
That's going to be awesome.
You mentioned being here, sleeping in your own bed, feeling like a human again. What is, so that is a lot of time to be on the road. What is your like go-to thing to do when you're first getting off the road and decompressing?
That's a great question. So weirdly enough, you'd think it would be to relax, but I actually feel like if I need to get in almost a good workout. And this isn't even necessary for my physical body, but I feel like there's a lot of, I don't even know what it is, but it's something about working out. It just feels so much better after I do it. And then I'll sleep better that night. And the next day, I'm usually tip-top Magoo, 100%. But yeah, a good workout when I get back. Hmm. It's one.
Yeah, no, how makes do sense, you usually though. Work out? Are you like more on the weight side, more cardio?
What I'd like to think, you know, because the other thing is, you know, I am 5'8", 160 pounds, so I'm not the most jacked guy in the world. But what I'll do is I'll do some weights, and then I'll get on the treadmill and just run, and then I do the sauna. So the sauna.
Yes.
Dude, I'm a huge sauna guy. So I'll sit in that sauna for 20, 25 minutes, come out there and just, I'll feel like $1 million. My mind feels clear. Body feels good. That's the ticket.
Yeah. You know what? Let me just say to everyone listening, get a sauna in your house. You get one of those portable ones at like $200. It'll change your fucking life.
I didn't even know you could buy one. I've been going to TrueFit. Here, plug in TrueFit right here.
I've got one in my living room.
What? Wow. You have a sauna in your living room?
Yes.
How did I not know this?
It's just a little box that you sit in. My head sticks out of it and it does a sleeve around your neck.
Wow.
It will change your life. Like like you feel like a different person when you get out of the sauna. The health benefits are enormous, and they're too many for us to even start going into.
Yeah, that's another podcast.
It's like Huberman. Literally, yeah, like I could talk about it for an hour straight. I hate saying this. Google it and just go buy yourself a sauna to change your life.
No, I can attest to it.
It'll be in the show
notes. I really do. I feel like, and it's something about it, you know, I know it's not like, I don't know the science behind it, but it feels like I'm getting out a lot of the terrible food / maybe the drinks that I've drinking on the road, you know? So it's a lot of that and just almost like a reset, but
It sure is. It is all of those things and more.
Okay, have you done a cold plunge?
See, I'm a little nervous about the cold plunge. I have done them. Sometimes my heart rate goes up a little bit too much. I'm like panicking a little bit. Yeah. I know that's part of it. You almost got to weather through that uncomfortability to get to the benefits, but I'm almost like, I need to get out of here immediately. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That fight or flight response is too good for me sometimes. I'm like, dude, I got to get out of this thing.
I did it only once. It was one session, so I did it technically two times. It was actually a sauna, hot sauna, and then cold plunge right after.
Nice.
Which helped, but like you're saying, your body's in shock.
Oh, man.
Yes,
and you have to
especially
mentally just
from
like
that.
Chill out and calm down.
I almost wonder if I did the cold plunge first with the anticipation of getting in the sauna, I could mentally be like, I can do this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There might be something there. Like, you're going to get in a sauna, it's going to be really warm, and you're going to love it, so maybe you can do this.
Yeah, you're gonna love it at least for the first, like, 5 minutes, and then about 15 minutes in, you'll be like, man, I miss that cold water.
Yeah.
Boy,
I could use
some of that ice cube action right about now.
Have you done one, Nate?
Cold plunge?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I
haven't done it in a while, but I would go and get like the big box or, you know, bag of ice from whatever, Kroger, and throw it in my bathtub and jump in there for a few minutes. But I need to get a better, an easier setup because that's just, it's just
too much.
Yeah.
I know people who do the meat freezers and they just fill it up with bottled water. And then they take those out and put them in. So you can always just refreeze them. So you never run out of ice, you know.
I like that. That's a good move. I like
that. But no, I haven't done it in a few months.
Yeah, me neither.
I might have to go home and do one. Well, I can't do it tonight because I'm going straight.
Just go outside.
Yeah. Just go get in the Cumberland. I'll be fine. Yeah.
No, that might be just as cold. Maybe colder.
Probably.
Yeah. Probably colder.
And definitely dirtier and dangerous.
Yeah.
Hey, drummers. Are you looking for something to aid muscular recovery, nervous system regulation? Something to help you age gracefully, or just looking to feel like the best version of yourself? If so, you gotta try a sauna and a cold plunge. Putting both together is the winning combo. You sweat out all the things that no longer serve you, like all the toxins you may have from food and drinks on tour, and then you get into a sobering cold that actually gets you high. Yep, the cold is a natural high. It also gives you focus and clarity. If you want this experience, head on over to Detox House Nashville. They offer both an infrared sauna and a cold plunge hydrothermal experience in a relaxed, private, and comfortable environment. Visit detoxhousenashville.com to book your first session. The password to book is release. And exclusively for listeners of the podcast, select the Drummer Special for $50 off 3 sauna and cold plunge sessions. Follow their Instagram at thedetoxhouse and visit detoxhousenashville.com to learn more and book your private session.
So you're from Pittsburgh, is that right?
Yeah, originally Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. You're used to the cold, right?
You know, it's like a different type of cold. It's a windy cold up there, which I don't like. Mm-hmm. You know, because that, you know, cold is one thing, but when you add in that wind chill, that's a whole different animal. I also lived in Chicago for a period of time.
Oh yeah,
right on the lake like that. Ooh, that was. Yeah. But yeah, here is great. Once I moved here, I was like, oh, these winters aren't bad at all. It's get like 32 degrees. People are like, man, it's freezing. I'm like, buddy, you're fine.
Yeah, lucky
you're
going to
be just fine.
Everything will be just fine. Yeah, I can't, my brain, which is still functioning basically as a Californian, cannot comprehend like a Chicago winter.
Oh,
I can't, like wait, what do you mean feet of snow? What do you mean? What does that mean?
Negative wind chill.
How does anyone live through that experience? Well, we just got the infrastructure for it. Yeah, what is that exactly? Explain that to me. I don't get it.
Yeah, inside. Yeah. That's kind of the secret.
It's,
the infrastructure doesn't make it warmer.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so from Pittsburgh, let's go full musical journey.
From when I was a kid? Or?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so when I was really young, my dad brought home a Pearl Export drum set. I was in fifth grade, and I'll never forget that because it was red. I think it had Aquarian heads
Let's
on
go.
It.
Yep.
And my dad's a drummer and a pretty good one at that.
No
like
way.
Pretty like you would watch him play and be like, oh, he can get around.
Yeah.
And so he brought it home, and I was like, wow, what's this? You know, because obviously as a kid, I had never seen a drum set. I was like, what's going on? Like, this is amazing. Heard him play a drum groove, like a good drum groove with some triplets in there. I was like, that might have been the coolest thing I've ever seen. And from then, I was like, you have to teach me. Like, you got to teach me at least a groove. Hmm. And from there on out, he just taught me. And then YouTube came along. So probably a year after that is when YouTube got popular with the drum videos. I had 3 Hudson videos. So I had John Blackwell.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I had the Neil Peart Anatomy of a Drum Solo. And then I had a Thomas Lang Interdependence and Independence video, which is very opposite of how I play today. But when I was a kid, I was so fascinated.
Yeah, those are the DVDs you want.
Oh my gosh. Like, yeah.
Complete inspiration.
Yeah. And honestly, for a young kid, that was a good, you know, you had the technical side of Tom Slang, you had the very musical side of John Blackwell, and then you had Neil Peart, who's just a legend. Peart, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I had that. And then for my 8th grade year, there was a talent show, and I very badly wanted to impress a girl I liked. So I was like, okay, I need to put this all together. And so I made a drum solo based on all 3 of those DVDs.
Whoa.
Yeah. So just, and trust me, it was nowhere even close to as good as any of them, but it was my best representation of that.
Yeah.
And played the talent show. I don't think they gave out any sort of awards for anything. It was like a participation thing. But ever since then, I've been hooked. So that was
but
the
you
younger
got the girl, right? And that was the prize.
Never got the girl either, unfortunately. Yeah. So yeah. The prize was learning how to play drums.
Because you weren't doing any odd time. That's probably why. Yeah. Maybe you were. Maybe she didn't understand.
No 7/8 or anything like that. No good ostinatos. It was I was playing a 4/4
like,
group.
You had
she's like
triplets, but I just didn't feel
this is an advance
connection
for me.
Between
yeah. So that was the early years, and then got older. Sort of migrating into more of just like I would love to just put on headphones and play to my favorite song. It was still to this day one of my favorite aspects of drumming is the musical side of it. Got through college and actually started selling health insurance, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So playing in my basement, I had a little studio. So I played there and then sold health insurance for like 5 or 6 years.
How did you like selling insurance?
I hated it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it
soul
paid,
sucking.
Soul sucking. Paid the bills, but every day.
Picture
I was,
you as a health insurance
dude,
sales rep.
Yeah. It felt like it the whole 6 years. But.
So this is during college?
After college.
Okay. After college.
After college. So and when I finally decided, I was like, I'm going to take a stab and I'm going to try to move to Nashville. I'm going to try to make this thing work. I was 28 at the time. So I was older.
Yeah.
I had a couple buddies. Pete Wilson's one of them. He's played for a couple of people, Walker Hayes and some other guys. He was a great mentor. And I called him. I was like, hey, man, I'm thinking about moving to Nashville. I need a little bit of advice. You know, what's your perspective? He was like, is this something you really want to do? And if so, there's a couple of things I can tell you. One is learn how to run tracks. Two, get your snare tone dialed in. And three, learn how to play parts. And he was like, come down here and I'll help you get a gig.
That's great advice. Yeah.
So three very good piffy, you know, music industry words of advice from a guy that was doing it at a very high level and moved down. My wife, who I'm married to now, she was also down here. So that did help. Mm-hmm. And then started playing with a guy initially, Drew Green, who's a Sony guy, and Pete Wilson, the same guy, he helped me get that audition. And I was with Drew for, I believe, about a year. And probably some of the best like road experience that I had at the time was playing with him. And then transition from that, got one of my buddies, who's a bass player for Nate, he was playing with Nate. And I think Nate had maybe like 8 shows at the time for that year. And he brought me on to help build tracks for Nate. Mm-hmm. So initially I was just running playback for Nate. Wasn't even drumming. Yeah, and they were redoing some of the band. And Nate called me. He was like, hey, do you want to try to audition for this part? And I was like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And then from there on out, just been with Nate the whole time.
Yeah. Dude, I love that story. Because we often talk about like being, you know, marketable and hireable and like, and we've had great drummers that give really good advice about like learning the parts and being a great drummer. But what I love about your story is like you've, especially the tracks component and learning the parts.
Yeah.
Because that essentially kind of transitioned into the gig. Like,
yeah,
there wasn't really an audition, right?
No. Just, yeah. And weirdly enough,
I
wasn't even
you made yourself valuable, right? Like literally you were helping to make the show run.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then just kind of. It's a really beautiful transition.
Oh, right? Dude, and I tell people all the time, it's like most of the time when I walk into a room of drummers, especially in here, it's like I'm usually not even the best one in the room. Yeah, I tell people all the time, I'm like a meat and potatoes drummer. I play the same 4 fills and a nice groove, you know what I mean? But for the most part, it's like, you know, a lot of the guys that I know are much better than me. Mm-hmm. It's just the simplicity of understanding it's like my job is to support the band and the artist and to make sure the show runs smoothly every single time. You know, and if you can simplify it to that, sometimes like just letting your ego take a back seat just is so helpful in the team aspect of playing, you know, in a band like that.
1,000%. Yeah.
So that's at least, you know, from my perspective, you know, but at the same time, I always want to become a better drummer. You don't want to let that be a shortcut or a cop out for not being a good drummer.
Totally.
But you know what I mean? So there's definitely that.
Yeah.
But also understanding the role of what, you know, he wants from me.
Right. There's a difference between pursuing that, being like on the gig.
Yes.
Well, this is my time. Dennis Chambers talks about it. Like I can, some drummers, when I see them play, it sounds like they're practicing. Like,
yeah.
never want to be that guy.
No.
I don't want to sound like I'm practicing on the gig. at least not any gig that's of any
importance.
Any importance. Yeah. If I'm playing a nothing shift in the dead of winter on Broadway and there's no like the
perfect time to shed.
I'm gonna try.
That's what you have to do. Yeah. You know what I mean?
By all means, come to one of those shows and you will watch me practice.
Honestly, it makes those shows better though.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Sometimes
But anything where I'm like I'm representing an artist, like that, you're like, you got it. Like you said, ego backseat. Like,
yeah.
This is Here's what I'm here to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And so much of the music I play is exactly that. It's like, you know, four on the floor, simple fills. It's more about making it feel good, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of it. But yeah, the simplicity of it. Just keeping it simple, playing the parts.
100%. It's funny, I was going through some of your older videos, and I want to talk about social media and you know, what you think about videos,
yeah,
content.
Absolutely.
We all have to deal with that here in 2024.
Oh, man.
It's like some of your drum covers. And like, I think there's one I was watching earlier. It was the Cole Swindell song.
Yeah.
And like, it was still you. Like, you had some cool fills, but like, you were playing, you know, meat and potatoes, but it just felt good. The snare sounded great.
Yeah. And that's dude, it's funny that you bring that up, because like, in the beginning, like, I always viewed Instagram as almost like my calling card or like a business card. Hmm. So those videos I would post, you know, I would sit there and be like, okay, like, if I were to get hired, what do I think that they're going to want to see? You know? And I was like, the best thing that I do is I just, you know, I can play the parts, play the groove, and I can do that pretty well. So let me just market myself as that, you know? So with a lot of those videos, I would just listen to the record fills and I would try to get them near perfect, you know? And I would try to do a nice job of like making sure the drums sound good, learn how to EQ, compress, like all that stuff. And then a simple camera angle from the top down. And, you know, if any artist were to see that, they'd be like, oh, if he can play this song, he could probably play my song. I'll hire this guy.
Dude,
you know?
You guys know Harry Myrie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was just on the 10 Year Town podcast. It's a kind of a newer podcast.
Yeah. Yeah,
I saw that.
Songwriter.
Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. He literally talks all about that because he's like the YouTube guy, the dude, right? Like where you were saying, like, it's kind of your business card.
It is, yeah. No, it makes sense, because I mean, like, as an artist, like, you know, because I've gotten hired for a couple of different gigs, and almost every time they're like, yeah, man, I checked out your Instagram. I like the way you play. Yeah. A lot of it is just, and it's almost the simplicity of like, oh, he's playing that group pretty well. He'd probably play my group pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, especially if I know my stuff's pretty simple, you know.
True.
Now, would I get called for a jazz gig, or would I get called for, you know, to replace Todd Zuckerman? Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah.
But.
I'll get called for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Nathan hopefully might. Dan definitely went after that last video.
Yeah. Thank you.
You crushed that, by the way.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. I feel like we should talk a little bit about it, because I saw that recently. Okay. I was like, Dan, you sounded
amazing.
We'll
talk about the gong drum setup that you also have.
Yeah.
Just back to that quick, because, yeah, I mean, Harry was like, it's kind of a miss, like, if you're not, it's so simple. Like, you know, he's like, for live drummers that want a certain gig, it's like, you already know how you feel behind the drums. You love this instrument. All you have to do is show the world that, just put a camera.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be super professional.
No.
You know, like you said, like, know a little bit maybe about EQ, or hire anybody in Nashville or anywhere else to do that work.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, when someone wants to hire a drummer for a gig, they're going to see you do the thing that they want you to hire. It's pretty
exactly.
simple.
Exactly. It's, you know? It's almost like you're just showcasing exactly how you play on that gig.
Yeah.
You know, and for especially a developing artist that doesn't have the advantage of picking from maybe 10 really good players, you know, they're going to go through and go, oh, this guy can play. Let's get him,
yeah.
You know? And then you have a little bit of negotiating power too on what you ask for price-wise. Mm. It's like, you know, this is what I can do. I will play your songs just like this, you know, and that can help you in the negotiation process too. But
yeah.
I wanted to go back to the social media thing. And like, as we talked about, it is your calling card. And I know that it has gotten me in some trouble in the past, because I'll post, you know, whatever wild polyrhythmic shit that I'm like interested in and messing with. I had a dude doing some more like Americana rock stuff who I had played just a one-off gig with, actually a worship set at a church. Uh-huh. And he was like, oh, dude, you sound great. I've got some solo stuff I'd like you to be a part of. And then he went and checked my Instagram after that. And he was like, I don't know that you'd be interested in this. I was like, yo, like.
You can do the other thing.
I can do that too. I'm like, don't.
But I could see why you thought
that.
Yeah,
I'm like, just because I'm posting nerdy stuff doesn't, but to the world, knowing, like, that is the lesson that I learned, was like, oh, if you post that, it actually doesn't even matter if you played with that person, or it might not matter, because they might see that and go, yeah, oh, this is more your lane. Like that, this is just know that people are going to look at that, like you said, it's like a business card.
This is
what they do. Okay. I'm like,
right. And someone like me who's a drummer can go, like, especially you, Nathan, because I know you can play so much. So it's like, for you to play what I play would be an easy thing. But for an artist, they might not know the difference, right? They just look and say,
that's not,
you know. But I know personally, I was like, yeah, if Nate can play some crazy polyrhythm in 7/8 with some left foot ostinato, of course he can play a 4/4 groove. It's just a matter of that artist being, oh, I don't recognize this sound, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of that.
It's like the car can go.
It's easy to go. It's easy to go backwards. Yeah. You know, it's like it's not as hard. It's a lot harder for someone like me to do what you. Does that make sense?
But I will make the argument because there is such a thing as fantastic feel and fantastic pocket. And then there's pocket, and then there's
pocket.
Yeah. And my mentor would always say, he's like, the pocket can always go deeper.
Yeah.
It's like you can always have a deeper pocket. Like I heard some pocket today. I was listening to a Corey Henry song and I heard some pocket today that made me want to throw up. I was like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, so deep.
Ridiculous pocket.
Yeah.
So all that to say, I'm like, yes, I could just simplify it, but it doesn't. Not saying that I couldn't play something with good feel.
Oh, you definitely can.
Especially because that's what I get paid to do downtown.
Yeah.
But
you can also do the crazy stuff.
But I've also seen, to be fair to all the people going like, I don't know, because I've seen people who can do all that stuff. And when it comes to just making like a meat and potatoes thing sound and feel right and feel good, they just miss.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to name names, but I've encountered dudes with big names who have DVDs from Hudson where I'm like, hey, that thing that you do is really crazy. And also, I hate the way it sounds when you play a groove. Right. I hate it.
Well, you have to work on both. But yeah, I agree. It's not automatic.
Yeah.
Like it should be. I mean, it's probably easier to, like you said, go backwards.
Right. Kind of
rewind, but
it's like almost like a car with like 1,000 horsepower.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
About that.
So I'm like a Toyota Camry. You know what I mean?
Nice.
I can get down to
pretty as hell.
Very dependable. Yeah. I'm very consistent and I rarely break down. That's my marketing strategy for Neil Yakupin drums.
Toyota Camry.
You know what I mean?
Dude.
The Toyota Camry.
Camry
of drums.
Is the AK-47 of cars.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. That's a great analogy.
Take it out of the desert after 20 years, shake the sand out of it, and you just
You can also give it to your kids too. Like you can pass that down too.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. Yep, so there we are. Yep. I'm going to get a shirt that's like that.
Profound.
I'm just going to get a Camry and fill it to the brim with AK-47s. And that's going to be...
We'll see how fast
maybe
we can call it.
Yeah. That'd be all right. Well, yeah, I think it's important too, especially with content, is like having in mind the gig that you want or maybe 100%. You don't even know a gig, but just like the goal of that, you know? So like, and I for me, I'm still trying to balance that. I'd say most of like the gigs I do in town is country. So like, I'm not going to post a bunch of random... You know, I mean, the Todd Strickerman stuff is like kind of a one-off project that
it was
regardless.
Awesome.
Thank you.
And the thing is, like, but, when I'm home too, the stuff that I play is so different than the stuff I play out loud. Like, people are always like, "Do you like country music?" I'm like, "Yeah," but do I listen to country music when I get home? Not really. I listen to a lot of other stuff, you know. And typically, that's where my ears go.
And you're around it so much on the road, so
that's
good.
But it's also the business side of it where it's like it allows me to pay my bills.
Yeah.
So you know, that's the music business part of it. But when I get home off the road too, you were talking about like ways of decompressing. Sometimes the thing I like to do is just put on an album that I really like and just make up my own drum parts. Mm. You know,
what album comes to mind immediately when you say that?
Okay, weirdly enough, I was just listening. It's the I Love You album. I think it was, By the Neighborhood.
By the Neighborhood.
Hmm. Weird. So it's like, it's all rhythmic patterns.
I'm writing it down.
Yeah, it's a good one, right? So it's like, there's a lot of 2 to 4 bar rhythmic patterns, but there's no real drums. So it has a rhythmic structure, but it allows you to just play whatever you want on top of it without feeling like you're competing against another drummer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I will go through that whole album and just in my mind think like, okay, what would I do if I was on a cool pop gig like this? How would I play it? And then sometimes I'll just work on chops, you know, like if I have a new pattern I'm trying to work out, I'll try to make it fit inside of the framework of that song. And that's how I like to practice. You know,
dude,
it's
I love that.
That's one of my favorite ways.
And what a great way to like stay, you know, not that you're not having fun on tour, of course you are, but like stay fresh and young with our instrument.
You have to.
Cause it's so easy, especially when you're playing Meat and Potatoes. Yeah. It's like, no, I still want to explore this instrument. There's so much to explore in different genres and
inspiration. That's the fun. Like, and I always try to like maintain like that childlike enthusiasm with music and drumming because it is very easy to be like, okay, like this is what I do for a business.
Right.
I'm only going to do this. But then it becomes like every other job that you've ever had.
Right.
Rather than, okay, this, I get to play drums for a living. Yeah. That's pretty cool. You know, it's like,
don't let yourself hate it.
Don't let yourself hate it. Like, find something that's fun for you. And one thing that I always like doing, Daniel, I feel like you've been getting into this a lot, is recording drums. Mm-hmm. I love like recording and mixing drums. Mm-hmm. Like after I would do something like that, I would hit record and record those drums and then just mix them. even if I wasn't to post it or like to send it to anyone, I just kind of like to hear the end product and go, oh, I like the way this sounds.
Yeah.
You know, I made this sound kind of cool.
Do you feel there's been carryover between mixing the drums and then how you're actually playing the drums?
100%. It's almost like game tape in a lot of ways. Mm. You know, when you hear yourself recorded, things that I was like, oh, this is really cool when I'm playing it in the moment, I'll listen back and be like, it's a little sloppier than I thought. Or maybe I don't like that particular pattern in that spot. So yeah, it's super helpful.
For me, I find like just even just levels, you know, kick is too loud, or the hi-hat, or just like, especially the hi-hat, it's so easy for us to play cymbals too loud, right?
Oh yeah.
And especially if you're a session player, that's like, you can't play cymbals too loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is such a, that's why I really appreciate studio time now so much, because I have that automatic and objective feedback from the thing I'm hearing back when I'm like, oh, well, first of all, I was flamming. My kick drum was totally flamming on this section. I need to tighten that up. Yeah. Oh, like you said, oh, hi-hat way too loud. Like cymbal dynamics need to come down like 15%. Those kind of things you just can't, you really can't get by just playing. Mm. You kind of have to have that thing. And everyone, it's old hat at this point. People are like, yeah, well, you know, make sure to record yourself. But seriously, make sure at least get iPhone or whatever, smartphone recordings of yourself. But if you have the opportunity to be in like a studio and have that feat, use that, be like incredibly conscientious. And that, I would say, is maybe the best time to get your ego in the back seat.
Oh, yeah.
That is when you're like, I've been in, I've done enough sessions here in town where I'm like, okay, I know I can play. I know I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm going to let go of all of that and let this engineer just totally kick my ass.
Yeah, tell you what to do. Yeah.
This engineer I work with a lot named Cam, who's awesome. He'll just be like, Nate, sounds so good, buddy. Hey, on this next one, can we just maybe try it like this? I'm like, every time he says, Nate, sounds so good, buddy, I'm like,
Something's coming.
I fucked up. Yeah. I fucked up. I'm sorry, Cam. He's just such a sweetheart.
But those guys usually bring the best out of you.
They do.
And they usually bring the best out of you that helps the music become the best that it can be.
Yes.
So it's like, and if they can do it in a good, sweet, subtle way, you know, however you respond best to that is probably the best way.
Right. Yeah. And if you're getting to do that and you're still getting to bring your own voice, to which I've been lucky enough to be in sessions where they're like, well, we want you to do it kind of like you.
Yeah.
Like, do it. At least 20% Nate. Like, yeah. I'm like, okay, great. And they're like, okay, that's cool, but this part's not working. How do we make that work? Oh,
right.
Okay. Well, why don't you try it more like this? Oh, fantastic. Great.
Yeah. Like,
a little bit of feedback goes a long way.
It does, yeah. And in the right way, too, because there's guys that, you know, the moment they say something, it almost feels a little hostile, and you're like, okay, now I'm no longer creative.
Right.
Now I'm in a weird headspace. Mm-hmm. You know, so you don't want that. So a guy that can do it well.
Yeah, maybe maybe not like that. Maybe like good instead. Like, oh, okay, bud.
Yeah, it's like,
sure, I'll be right back.
Yeah, it's like, all right, now
I need to get some milk.
I want to go back to tracks and Ableton and that whole thing, because I feel like there's a lot we could talk about there.
Oh man.
And especially leading into tour launch.
Absolutely.
Which is the business that you co-own.
Yes. Yes.
Which is no small thing that we should definitely cover.
Oh dude, I'd be happy to talk
about
that.
I want to get into all that. So moving here, did you know much about any of that, or was that sort of, you mentioned your buddy, I forgot his name already.
Pete Wilson. Great drummer. Also one that, like, he would be great on this podcast. Very seasoned, very great. Yeah. Human being and a great drummer. But when we talked to him, or when I talked to him, he was like, yeah, make sure you know how to run tracks. He's like, you don't have to be an expert at building an Ableton. He's like, but know how to move around in it.
Right. Yeah.
Know how to operate a session, because I can put you in more audition rooms if you can.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, the one thing. It's like, even if you're not crazy about it, and, you know, I have my views on music, because there's a part of me, like, I grew up in a household that my dad liked, you know, 70s rock. So like, when I hear the tempo fluctuate and I hear four instruments on stage, there's a part of me that wants music to be just that. Mm-hmm. But there's also the business part of my brain that knows it's not like that today.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's the tough part in the tough world that we live in. It's like, you do have to adapt. Totally. And part of that today is, you know, whether it be budget or we're just trying to get a certain sound, tracks are a huge part of live shows today. You know, so, you know, that would be my advice. And, like, obviously his advice to me was just learn how to operate it at a basic level. If I can build a session, you know, that's great. But if I can just press play and know how to run it, know how to set it up, you're better off than a lot of other people.
Totally.
You know?
It's kind of like you don't need to be an Olympic swimmer, but if you end up in the water, you want to not drown.
You want to know how to swim.
That's a good
right?
analogy.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And it opens up, if you, and you know, once again, everyone's different. Some people may not want a very traditional gig like that. Some people may want to be a clinician or, you know, whatever the case may be. But if you do want to be in the live show world and get a, you know, mainstream pop gigs or country gig, it's a good idea to know how to do that.
Yeah,
you become more valuable and you make, you know, from a business standpoint, from the artist, you become more valuable because they either have to pay less people or you make their show better just from the fact that they don't have to hire 10 musicians, you know, to be honest.
This is a comfort thing too, you know, like the artist will just, the whole band will feel comfortable knowing that they can trust you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when Pete said that to you initially, you're like,
terrified.
Googling what is tracks? Like,
yeah, terrified. Because I never worked in Ableton, right?
Yeah.
So it actually worked out well because the next weekend I was going to play at a church and play the tracks for the very first time,
oh, wow.
which went horribly, by the way. So going back to that, yeah, it was one of these church songs that for some reason had like a bar of seven in it.
And wonderful.
I had, yeah, right? Weird, right? Yeah. So I had practiced all week to this new thing, like the click and the tracks and everything. And I thought I was pretty well prepared for it. We get to that Sunday, I press play. We're halfway through the song and that bar of seven comes up. And somehow I ended up almost a full bar off of it. I don't even know where I was, if I was ahead or behind. Bad, right?
Hmm.
Yeah, so not good. So we get off, and then Cam Marburger, who's also a bass player here, he was playing at the church at the time. He was like, there's going to be another service. You're going to be all right. And the second service went much better. But ever since then, I was like, I'm going to become an expert at understanding what's going on in Ableton, and then I'm also not going to make the same mistake, which is I'm going to play to the click constantly.
I love that. See, yeah. And often that seems to be that's a similar story of like, failing first.
Yeah.
Not that you need to, but like, or maybe like you shouldn't like seek to fail, but maybe you should.
Right.
I don't know. But that's cool that like that happened. And then
oh,
you're like,
man.
Okay, I know what to work on now.
Oh, dude. And from there on out, I became a little wizard.
Remember,
inside
Nico
of Ableton,
was like,
yeah.
I'm going to read the manual for
yeah.
Ableton.
Like, mm-hmm.
That's the mindset you should have.
Yeah. The amount of like YouTube tutorials that I've watched on it now I feel so comfortable in it that it's like, it does become a lot like second nature,
yeah.
You know? But it helps, you know, and that kind of launched into the tour launch thing, which, you know, obviously we can talk about too, but it's been super helpful not only for my drumming, but also for just like overall in my business side of it.
Sure. You know? Yeah. Let's go there. Tell us about what tour launch is and who that's for and
yeah.
what services you guys provide.
So me and Mikey McDowell, who's the bass player that I play with now, and then also Stefan Guy, who I used to play with, we kind of came together and we're like, okay, we know some of the things that some of these developing artists need. What can we do to service them? And I'm talking about artists that are just getting off the ground. And one of them was we were going to start renting IEMs, so in-ear monitors to them, and then also building tracks. So that was like a huge part of it. It's like, we can build these shows for people. Why don't we do it for some of these developing artists and help them get off the ground at a price that's not ridiculous?
Yeah.
Like some of the costs that I've seen for some of these show builds, I'm like, guys, do not pay $10,000 for someone to build your show. You are way overpaying for that,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so our niche is like that developing artist that has a small budget that needs a good product, you know, we're there to service them.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you'll build a complete Ableton, they'll give you stems and you'll just
build a whole show, transitions, any sort of loops, anything mm-hmm. that they need, and then also provide them with hardware. So like a good playback rig, the in-ear monitors that they need to actually hear what's going on, and then send them off. You know, at a good price. That's the other thing. I'm not trying to work anybody over. I think that's the most important thing.
Well, it's cool that it's coming from musicians. So like you said, you're not trying to rip anybody off. It's,
and you know
it's
it too.
Right,
like,
and
we're all like unfortunately victims of like bad show builds and like sessions you look at and you're like, what is going on in here? Like this is done very haphazardly and like sloppy and probably didn't care too much about it and then charged an insane amount. We don't want that.
Yeah.
You know,
I find that there is an easier way to do these things, and having someone like you, someone with this business coming in and going like, I will do this for you. And then you can just look at how I did it.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Look at how much better this is.
Right.
Right now I'm learning that with transcribing. Cause I'm like, I'm going through and transcribing a couple albums that I played on, which I'm like trash at transcribing. So I'm going back and going, man, this is really, really hard. How do I write this?
You also have pretty hard parts. So
that's true.
Part those the parts, yeah. those parts are
my yourself. Parts in a couple of days.
Yeah. Those are
everything that I've ever
those
done.
Those are pretty, they're pretty, they're fairly, we'll call them involved. They're fairly involved parts.
Yeah. There'd be a lot of copy and pasting on mine.
But I've got a friend, my buddy, well, we just had on a little while ago, Jake Robinson has been helping me out. I would write something in a certain way and be like, no, you know, here, let me.
Yeah.
This is a better way. This is, I'm like, oh, cool. Beautifying them.
Yeah.
As I'm
yeah.
looking at them, like, that's so much better. See, that's all I needed is just someone to come alongside me.
A little help. Yeah. Like,
okay, show, just how do I do this better?
Yeah.
That's great.
Dude, having that, a yeah. good show build is so important because I've done a bunch of sub gigs. And it's funny, it's a lot of the best sets are from sets that drummers have created.
Oh, all right? the time.
I'm like, yeah. I opened Ableton's file and it had Dan Kozlowski in the file name. And I was like,
yeah,
you know it's gonna be good.
Yeah, I didn't even open it. I was like, "Thank you, Dan." Yeah,
thank you already.
Yeah, same with Rob Bodley. You know, yeah, yep. yeah having some yep. of those guys in your corner, you know, to, yeah. to help out.
And, it's organized, easy to understand. You don't feel like you're looking at, you know, some fulcrum's last conundrum or anything. It's like it actually makes sense. Yeah, yeah. that's a big deal.
Yeah, you'll
that's,
be the one I'm coming to.
That's great.
If I need to run some Ableton, and
oh,
some
dude.
Tracks
well, I would yeah. love it. Anytime yeah. you need it, you just let me know. Yeah. We would be happy. Yeah. I love it too. And weirdly enough, I'm like such a nerd at heart, so I love that stuff so much.
Yeah.
You know,
you actually just get into it.
Oh, I love it. You know, which is very weird. You know, but like those two things, it's going back to like love to record myself and then mix it. Hmm. Something about that, I just the digital aspect, the technological aspect. I love it.
What do you think it is?
I don't know. I really don't know. That's a good question. There's probably something in my upbringing, but
yeah. Well, I think not to answer for you, but like going back to our interview with Andy from Drum Supply, like mm-hmm. he was a tinkerer and he still is. I think maybe it's the physical component of building the hardware. I feel the same way when I built my small rig here.
It's like, yeah.
it was fun just to label all the cables.
Oh, and it's satisfying, and like isn't it?
Build the puzzle of how it's all going to get connected. And
yeah.
you know, same with Ableton as well.
Yeah, a little sense of achievement when you're done. You're like, yeah. oh, okay, I feel like I built something that works really well.
I feel like you most know, drummers like, are like more type A too. Maybe that's
probably yeah, it. That's probably a little bit of what is too.
Did you guys play with Legos?
I did. Dude, that's so I was much. Just thinking in my head, I was like, maybe there's a Lego connection. yeah. I was a huge Lego guy when I was younger.
Yeah, yeah. okay. That's yeah. I thought
okay,
you
might that, be. Okay, that's it. That's smart.
yeah, I think
you're the brains in the organization.
Well, I think there's just there's certain people that just like they get a kick out of organizing things.
Yeah.
My wife is one of those people. So she just, you know, she's a virtual assistant and project manager. So she's like putting something into order, especially if when someone else is like, help me. yeah. Here's some money. She's like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Here's how to set up your business. There.
Oh yeah.
You were doing it stupidly. Here, do it less stupidly now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's. I think there are some people that just have that in them. Oh, it just feels good. Like, things are out of order. I can just put them in order, and you can just give me money to put it in order for you, and we're both happy.
Yes,
it's yeah. in order.
And that's what I always tell people is like, I'll be happy to show you what I did. Right. You know what I mean? I tell any of the guys, you can if you have a session, keep my session template.
Yeah.
Like I keep no secrets. You know what I mean? Like that's the other thing. It's like anytime a guy's he's like, can I use your template? I was like, dude, go ahead. I took a lot of the things that I learned from other people too. Same with drumming. You know, it's like so much of anything that I know is something that I've learned from somebody that does it better than me.
Right.
You know, that's a big
because
part
of course it is.
It has to be. Like none of this was just conceived in my
then,
brain.
Then
like,
you still
you
make
know?
It your own.
Like, for sure.
No drummer is the same. The same with Ableton. I could take your template and I'm going to change the track color.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Mine, you know?
Or you organize it some a little different, route it different. You know, there's a thousand things you can do, but
totally.
Yeah. You know, so it's like, I would never gatekeep that. Yeah. So anything that I make is free game. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, super smart. You're targeting more the up and coming artists, like you said.
Yeah.
But then you're also available to consult drummers and anybody that has
absolutely,
builds,
man. Right? Yeah. Any
so
questions?
When did tour launch? Launch.
Last year, actually, in March.
Last year.
Yeah. When did it launch? Yeah.
That's awesome.
No. So it's been going for last March. So it's a little over a year. So actually, now it's almost 2 years. No, so not last March, but the March before. So we're actually coming up on 2 years, which is crazy to think about. But
yeah, it's been cool following that, you know, the Instagram account and your website and that journey, like seeing the artists that is like,
dude, we got to work with some awesome artists.
It's a great,
so far,
I mean,
you know,
super smart way to network and build your network, like selfishly, you know.
Yeah, dude, it really is.
So you've gotten to hire other. I saw like Andrew Bone, like you've worked with him. So
yeah.
Do you hire other drummers to help, kind of like freelance? How does that work?
We do. We've hired. So occasionally, like they'll do a full show build, which is they need a band. Like so, an artist may come and go. You know, have this song that's doing really well. I don't have a band. I don't have a show. I don't have anything. I don't even. Some of them don't even know how to perform, which is very weird in a way because it's so backwards to the way my brain works, right? Like I would think, okay, this person is a successful artist. They played 100 shows. You know, they know exactly what they're doing. They have a great band. But in today's day and age, especially the social media age, sometimes the chicken is coming before the, you know, that kind of thing where it's like the artist blows up well before they have a band or they've played a lot of shows. So what our approach is okay, we're going to catch you up to speed ASAP. We're going to give you a really good band, right, with guys that I know can play and do a good job. We're going to give you a good session and good hardware, you know, and you're going to be up and running quick. Because a lot of times it's a game of like, hey, we need to get this done fast.
Yeah, like days or weeks or you lose it, right?
I hadn't really thought about that. That's true.
Yeah.
The like
you know what I mean, but the CJ, I could see in your eyes. You're like, I know.
There's a lot of these artists who are just blowing up. Like, I just put something on TikTok and now it's got, you know, 10 million listens.
Yeah.
And I'm being asked to tour.
Yeah.
But I've never done that.
I don't even have a band.
Right.
You know?
It's like, I don't even know where to find a band. That's true.
What is a band?
That's just so, that's so alien to me.
It's very counterintuitive.
That's a lot of people's experience now.
It's a lot of what's going on in the music, or mainstream music, you know? So it's very popular today, and you're like, whoa, this feels weird. But it's happening.
Are you finding even in country, in Nashville, that's the case, or not
you know,
so much?
And, and once again, it's not to take away from the artists, because a lot of these artists just do have tons of talent. You know, they have a lot of potential. Mm. It's just one of those things where it's like, what a weird order, you know, to do things. But at the end of the day, for them, it's probably the best thing that's happened to them. So,
well, it's just, I mean, I imagine also it's like, do you, okay, so in doing this, do you also kind of like give pointers on performance?
You know, we try not to overstep, but yeah, there are times where I'm like, hey, like I would watch this, you know, or watch your dynamic control vocally and everything like that, you know, and we try to, you know, be, because you also are dealing with maybe young people or with somewhat fragile eagles. Yeah, so it is a delivery thing, right?
Yeah.
But absolutely. Yeah, we'll definitely coach them on performance and like, hey, this is how you do things. This is what it looks like at a professional level. I can show you these examples. This is probably how you should do it, or at least model your show after.
That would be helpful for so many people, even in these, a lot of these people are like, actually performing and going out and playing shit. Like a lot of the prog scene, you have people who are incredible at their instruments and play like they'll
some
play
of the best,
but really boring to watch. Like, you go watch, like this totally standing still. Like, hey, this that's cool, but if I wanted to hear, if I just wanted to hear your album, I would just listen
just
to your
listen
album.
To it. Yeah. Yep.
Where's the live component? Where,
give me something. I don't want like really, really. I came to like experience the energy of that thing.
Yes.
So there, that's pretty cool, man. Yeah. That's a wow. What a cool business you have.
And it's funny because like you bring up a great point. You know, when you go see a live show, some of the best ones are obviously like you want the music to be great. You want the performance to be great. But so much of the performance is visual at that spot. You know, whether it's the lights or whether they, you know, how they interact on stage, their stage energy, like so much of that goes into the overall, did I like that show? You know, I know some of my favorite shows, I saw the 1975 in Pittsburgh. Mm. That show was great. You know, the drummer obviously is an amazing drummer, but like their whole production was one of the best I've ever seen. And a lot of that for me is what makes a show very interesting. Yeah. You know, so it's like, it's not just at that point, it's not just what you're hearing, it's also what you're seeing.
Right.
Yeah. 100%.
And that's, I know there are a lot of quote unquote music purists who will buck at that idea. Oh, it shouldn't be like that. Well, it is.
It can be.
And so get over it.
Yeah. And, you know, and there is a time too, like where I like to go to like a smaller club and just listen to a, like a jazz group. And sometimes that's what I'm going for. But there is still a visual aspect to that. I almost want to see them having a good time and interacting with each other. And so there is still a visual component. Maybe it's not huge lights, fireworks, and pyro, but there is still something visual that I need with that. You know, like the audio.
Yeah, there's a conversation happening, especially in jazz.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Well, like if I go to a metal show and someone, like someone on the album has this like brutal scream and they do that part and I look at them and they're just looking, they're just kind of like sitting. I'm like, man, I want it to look like you're like
chaos.
Losing your mind up. That's what I want from that. That's what I want at a metal show. Like there are. There are different vibes that I want to get from different shows. Here's an idea. Learn how to make those things happen. Learn how to put on a good performance.
Yes.
Bring someone like my boy on to have you streamline your show and make it excellent.
Thank you, dude. Yeah. I appreciate it. But yeah, that's, I mean, it's a good aspect of it. important.
So where can people get a hold of Tour Launch?
You can either go to our Instagram, you can go to our website, which is tourlaunchnashville.com. So I appreciate you giving me a little plug opportunity there.
Totally.
But yeah, that would be, you know, that's something that we have really been happy about. It started out as a passion project, but now it's just like, I'm having so much fun doing it. I don't, you know, I could see this going as long as I do music.
Yeah.
You know, I love
it. I think that there's something to be said there too for people listening that maybe have any sort of passion that they love to do. It's like, if you love to do it for yourself, you could find a way to do it for others and maybe make some money off it. You know,
yeah.
Like, maybe you're not an entrepreneur, but you actually, it's easier than people think.
Oh, yeah.
Especially these days to start a business. I mean, us starting this podcast.
Yeah.
You know, we're a business and it started from absolutely nothing. You know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's crazy to think about how much you guys have grown too. That's another thing. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's
almost
a
freaky growth, you know?
Yeah. It's weird. And it's like you said, you're like, well, maybe this never becomes something big, but maybe I get to affect a few people and like get to have some fun interactions from it. And that's fantastic.
That's all you need.
Like you said, starting from a passion project, if it's something you're interested in doing anyway, Why not give it a shot?
Yeah. It goes back to that old adage of like, find what you love and then figure out a way to get paid for it.
Yeah.
And if you can kind of combine those, not in a weird, like, you know, corporate, you know, capitalistic way, but just like, you know, we all need money. So it's like, it'd be great if I could do things that I love and make money, you know?
I like to be able to, you know, pay my mortgage and eat food and feed my wife as well and my cat.
And you're gonna have to do something to get that money,
yeah,
right?
So might as well be something dope.
It might as well be right. It's like do a podcast, talk to drummers. Yeah. That sounds great.
That sounds
awesome. Build Ableton sessions or play drums. That sounds fun. Yeah, yeah. Let's do that. You know?
Yep.
100%.
I'm over. I was a roofer. I told you I was in health insurance. I'm done with that. You know, like I'm trying to get into a new phase of like I'm doing things that I love and that I care about and that I feel like I can be good at. And I'm sticking to that.
Yeah. You know what? Speaking of health insurance, my best friend.
Okay.
One day, he was working in insurance for a while, and I just decided to torture him by sending one of my other friends in there that he didn't know.
I was like,
just go in there and mess with him. I want you to ask him a bunch of dumb questions. So he went, can you sign in? Yeah, sure. He goes and sits down. How can I help you? What do you guys do here? We sell insurance. What kind of insurance? Car, motorcycle, RV. Life insurance? Before he can even answer, can I take out a life insurance policy on someone without their knowledge?
Oh, no.
I guess you could talk to him. He points to this other guy across the room. He goes, oh, that guy? Yeah. That's my dad. Really? No. And then I walked in the room and my friend looked up and realized I had made the whole thing
instantly
happen.
Instantly was
like, get the hell out of here.
I love that.
Yeah, in his mind, he's probably like, what is happening?
What's
right
happening?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Give me your weirdest interaction while selling health insurance.
I've had a couple weird ones. I've had a couple ones where, well, there was one couple, and they were actually a sweet couple, but they were very old and they couldn't hear very well. So, I mean, I'm already a kind of a soft talker, but I'm telling you guys, I was screaming. Like, hey, you know, like if you're going to buy, like that level of, and they still were kind of leaning, and I almost felt like I was on one of those Impractical Jokers thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Where it was like, there's no way they can't hear what I'm saying right now. But that might have been my weirdest and most uncomfortable interaction that I've ever had.
That's so weird.
Yeah. And imagine an hour of that. So, I feel like I gave myself a headache that
day. Did you get the sale?
No. And they were not buying from this moment I walked through the door. I could just tell. It was a rough go.
But they took the 1-800 survey at the end of the call and they were like, well, we couldn't hear
what
you're
exactly, saying. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was like some letter that they got. I was like, man, I'm going to McDonald's and I'm going home.
Hey, Kingston, Surrey County, Jamaica is calling me. I'm sure that's somebody I really know.
Well, that might be a health insurance salesman right there.
Jeez.
Oh, man.
You've heard of Drum Supply, but you gotta see their shop. It's a drum shop experience like no other. They're packed with all the gear a working drummer needs, and so many parts, noise toys, and accessories. It's a toy store. Curated cymbals, kits, and snares. The hands-on percussion room is nuts, and their custom shop work is fast and affordable. Andy and the guys know their stuff, and they're ready to help. And the big news? They've just moved to an awesome new location near the corner of East Trinity Lane and Dickerson Pike. Still in East Nashville, just a couple miles from their old spot, the all-new Drum Supply is twice as big, featuring a dedicated cymbal room, a lesson space, and even more drum gear than ever. Go see the new Drum Supply shop for yourself. Now open 11 to 5 at 2211 Dickerson Pike and online at drumsupply.com.
Okay, tour launch. Let's transition to tour. I want to talk a little bit more about your tour experience.
Okay.
It's just cool hearing like your journey, like from your first, you know, gig at a church and now like, especially with the Nate Smith gig, you know, you're playing baseball stadiums and now super stoked for you in 2024 at the Wallen tour. And what's that change been like for you? Because we've had a few guests on that have similar stories. I'm thinking of Kip Allen, and I remember him saying his first like stadium noticeably big gig. It was kind of underwhelming for him.
Yeah.
He told us. And I'm sure he obviously has a great gig and loves it. And
well, it's funny, man.
What's it been like for you?
So the one of the most more intense one was we actually did Jimmy Fallon this year. That one felt a little different when I sat down for that one, mainly because I was such a huge Questlove fan growing up. So I mean, we're up on the stage and we're about to play, and we've kind of run through everything, but it is not live. It's live to tape, right? So we do everything live and then they'll air it later that night, but you do get one shot. Right. So there's that, all right, let's get it right this first time.
You know?
And we're up there, and I remember hearing, you know, the Roots play, and I was like, man, this feels like an out of body experience right now. I'm watching one of my favorite drummers play, you know, 20 feet away from me. And I remember when they finally announced us, and I was like, ooh, this is about as nervous I've ever been to play. But we got through that. But that one felt very different. Weirdly enough, I understand what he's saying about the stadiums. Something about the way the lights hit, it almost feels like you're playing for 100 people.
Yeah,
because you can't even really see what's going on. It almost just feels like one person.
Yeah,
weirdly enough, even though there's might be 30,000 or 40,000 people.
Well, that makes sense. It's almost like the bigger it is, it's like you're actually just like alone on stage, right?
Sometimes the smaller, more intimate shows, like we've done a couple radio ones where there's 100 maybe label execs in the room, but they can all see you.
Yes,
they're all looking at you, kind of like this. That's almost more nerve wracking, and in a weird way, like a little more uncomfortable.
Yeah, no,
so it's a little counterintuitive. Yeah, it's like the bigger, it's like, oh, this is easy, you know? I see the lights and I see 10 people in the front row and that's it. You know?
Well, and especially in that case, when it's a bunch of execs, you're like, all of you affect me a lot.
A lot, yeah. Yeah, and it feels a little weird, you know? Yeah. Like, whoa, dude, they don't even like music. Why are they, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? But yeah, it does feel a lot different, you know? In those stadium shows, I remember the last two, I couldn't have been any more excited, mainly because we were wrapping up the year, but just to even do a stadium, you know, especially one that I had seen baseball games at, I was like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah,
you know?
That's cool, yeah. Do you remember your first major gig like that, or your first memorable...
First memorable gig? Mm-hmm. Man, I guess my first like professional gig was actually at a bar with a guy named Justin Vabis, but that one was one to forget. I think probably, that was a rough one. That was not the best one. But there's been a couple good ones. Probably one of the most memorable ones. We opened up for Jared Neiman, who is, they have a great drummer too. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But yeah, he was great. We opened up for him. It was with Drew Green. And there was probably maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people. And that's when I first was like, okay, I'm kind of addicted to playing live.
Yeah.
That's when that adrenaline set in, and I was like, okay, getting in and wearing this a little bit, like I really like this. I'm going to try to do this all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And that was like the first time where I probably got hooked.
So that was before the Nate Smith gig?
It was before. Gotcha. Yeah, I had moved to Nashville, but it was before the Nate Smith gig.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Like, I wonder what that other gig was. I wonder why it was so bad.
Oh, yeah. And he wasn't from Nashville. So, yeah. And he's a nice guy. But, yeah, it was a rough one. Yeah. It was one of those ones where I feel like everyone was a little drunk, too. You know, it was like one of those gigs where it's like, ooh, I might be the only sober one on stage here.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Is that also, that's something I'd like to ask. Do you drink when you play?
I can't. For some reason, I can have maybe one shot before. Yeah. After that, I can just feel it in my hands. You know, that little bit of like, okay, I need to make sure that I'm on my P's and Q's, that starts to go away after two.
Yep.
So I almost just keep it to a nothing before it. Plus, I kind of like the freak of like, oh, like I got no alcohol in my system and we're going to go do this. Like,
I
kind of like that rush.
Yeah.
You know?
I party just, after.
Yeah.
Whatever.
There's so many people that I'm so accustomed to in playing downtown. Watching everyone else drink, although thankfully I play in a couple of groups where there's not much drinking at all happening, which is fantastic. But there's so much of that. It's just like, I like 3 or 4 drinks during the show. I'm like, really? Wow. Yeah.
It's such a physical instrument that we play too. It's like, Yeah. I feel like it really starts to get slippery after a few drinks.
Yeah, it's a fine line. I mean, I guess everyone's tolerance is a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like for me, I like to loosen. I might have one or two to loosen up, but like not while I'm playing.
Really. And then after, we like to tear it down too. Yeah, you know, we'll have a good time after. But yeah, before it's like, I almost kind of like the adrenaline rush of like, okay, we're going into this raw dogging it. You know, we're just going to feel all the energy and adrenaline and
feel the nervousness.
Yeah, that'll be your drug for it. Yeah, that'll be your drug for an hour and then get off stage and go have a couple. Let that be your thing.
Do you get nervous before some of these shows?
You know, it's funny. Probably the smaller ones, weirdly enough. Like when they're smaller and I don't have my drums, like if I'm on a cajon, that's when I start to get nervous. I'm like, if I'm behind the drums, like a full kit, and we're doing a show with the band that I play with, rarely do I get like nervous to the point where it's uncomfortable because I trust those guys so much too. That's the other thing. I have such faith in that band that it's like, these guys are going to crush it every single night. It's like, makes my job so easy.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Dude, how was your, so you did a home show, was that last month in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it was so great. Nate was so kind about it too, man. He brought me out on the front truss, which is, once again, I'm the farthest thing from like a star. So it's like, I love to be behind the drum set, away from people. Like, I want to play my drums and get right off stage and go away.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, like, I would do terrible as a front man or even like a guitar player. Like, I just wouldn't be that kind of guy. But he was nice enough. He brought me out on the front truss and like, waves with my parents. He, you know, called them out, gave him a little shout out. So it was very sweet, man. And there's something about going back home to play a show.
Yeah.
All my friends got to come too. So that was special. You know, like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Dude, it was very, it'll be one of those memories that I'll hold on to for a good minute.
Yeah.
You know,
it's so special. It's so cool.
You know, I actually have a story about meeting Nate.
Do you really? Oh, yeah. I'd love to hear this.
So one night when I was working at Daddy's Dogs, in Printer's Alley, in the little closet that they have there, this guy, this fellow, walked up to my window and ordered a hot dog. And I would always have a practice pad and sticks, and I'd be, you know, in between customers, would be doing stuff. And we just started talking about music because I was, you know, doing the thing. And he said, he was like, "Oh, where are you from?" And I told him I'm from Redding, California. He's like, "What?"
He's from Chico.
He goes, "I went to." I mean, obviously, you know Bethel. I went there for a little bit. I'm like, yeah. It's like, yeah. We just talked about it for a minute. It's like, yeah, my name's Nate Smith. I do country music. I was like, oh, right on, man. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I know nothing about you.
Right.
But then, after the fact, people are like, oh, yeah, Nate Smith. Yeah, of course I know who that is. I'm like, oh, well, that's cool. Well, he bought a hot dog from me.
That's actually very on brand.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I could see him doing that.
Yeah.
And so that was years ago now, right?
Yeah. I haven't worked for Daddy's Dogs. And
also, there's one opening in Madison. I'm so bummed about that. Is it good?
Daddy's Dogs?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very good.
All right.
Fresh, like...
Real deal.
All beef franks, a freshly made, locally baked bun. Good stuff. Yeah. I'm a supporter.
That. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
From someone that worked there, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
You still remember your sales pitch. That's good.
Yep. I feel like I had the best pitch down... Well... I worked with a girl named Janae. Her pitch was more like, "Let me put Daddy's meat in your mouth."
Oh, okay.
That is a lot.
That is intense.
That's what she.
That's
would
next
say.
Level.
She
would say, "Ask me about my wiener."
Yeah, you got to lean into it though. You know.
Yeah, she was. Yeah,
especially if you're on Broadway.
A lot more brazen than myself, and could get away with that also because then it was. She's like, "No, I really am talking about just a hot dog. I don't have any of the equipment that you might be imagining."
The equipment.
Yeah,
I'm glad you shared that story because I was gonna just say next. Like, I've never actually met Nate, and I've seen you guys play once. It was that rooftop there at Fifth and Broadway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah,
man.
Tell us. I mean, he seems like he's just the nicest, coolest
dude.
Like,
he's been
artist you want to play for.
He's been so good to us, man. He's been an easy boss to work for, you know. And I really love his he loves music so much, and he has such a broad catalog of what he likes. You would never think that he would have landed in country. Like, he is more into like underground punk rock metal than.
See, I would never have guessed,
dude.
That.
Like, he's got a nice like broad catalog of a lot of different genres, and that was what I was most shocked about. But it also kind of comes across in his music, like. He loves his little delay throws and, you know, like his certain style of delivery, his bigger vocals. Like, there are things that he was probably pulling from music he used to listen to and bringing it into a country sphere. And I think that's what makes music cool. It's like, even if you're in a genre, it's like, find something that's outside of it and bring it in to make it a little different.
Yes.
Make it a little more interesting. You know what I mean?
Please, for the love of God, do that.
Please, right? For our sake too, as musicians. You know what I mean? Like, I want to play some cool stuff.
Yes.
You know, songs I like and I'm inspired by, you know?
I mean, identity, man.
That's huge. That's a great word.
That's, have a thing that's you. You're like, this is me. I like these things and I've decided to put them together.
Yes.
That's fabulous. That's what I want to hear.
That's something. You know what I mean? It's not, it doesn't feel like a cookie cutter, you know, stamped out of a mold. It's like, oh, this feels like you.
Yeah. You know? I can tell that this is, I know more about you just by listening to this. Yeah.
That's a great way to put it. You know more about the person by listening. That is a great way to put it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've heard you guys do the Chasing Cars cover.
We do, yeah.
You guys have
kind of goes
fun,
back to that, yeah.
Yeah, any other fun, like, live show, you know, different songs, covers, transitions?
Dude, funny enough, we were talking about tracks and click. We have a couple moments on a couple of the songs where we do a couple outros where there is no click, no tracks. Some of my favorite parts of the show. Because we've kind of, like, nudged them. We're like, let's try this, you know? And it is a good part of the show because it does feel a little, like, off the grid. You know, there's a little bit more, like, sometimes we'll do four bars in the beginning intro. Sometimes we'll do six. You know, it's there's a little bit, there's almost a change that happens to, okay, I'm listening for the structure of the song to now I'm listening more towards the band, which you wouldn't think would happen. But now I'm paying so much more attention to what's going on in my ears with my band rather than like, okay, where are we at in the track situation?
Yeah.
And I like that. There's a difference, there's a change. But we try to incorporate those moments into a pretty modern style show.
Yeah.
To keep a little bit of realism and like, oh, this is still like a kind of off the cuff.
Dude, I love that. Yeah.
You know?
I feel like not every artist would even be okay with that.
Yeah. And we try to implement that with our show builds. It's like, hey, it's okay to have a spot where it varies tempo. That's normal. Yeah, if you look back at a lot of those great shows in the 70s and 80s, it's like, none of them were to a click.
Right?
You know, so it's, that's okay. You know, you're allowed to do that. And sometimes, actually, it might be better.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, Journey didn't play those songs to a click.
Yeah.
Those are not to a click.
Yeah.
Like in the recordings.
Yes.
Imagine live.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it changes it. It changes the feel. It changes the energy. Like it's a whole different thing, you know? So it's like you want to have the, and what we try to do is the best of both worlds, right? So we have the parts where it's structured, where we have the time code with the lights and everything's gridded and fun and nice, but then have those moments where it's like, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
This is not something you're going to get at another cookie. You know what I mean? Like we want it to feel a little organic, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So then that way, I mean, every show is kind of different.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. There's variants, you know? I think that's so important, cool. you know?
It's important for your own sanity. And I really do think like sanity and also just truly as it speaks volumes to the fact that he is an artist.
Yes.
To me, a real artist wants to at least make something on the fly.
Oh,
like if
you're
just doing the same show, the exact same identical show night after night, to me, that's, then this is a fairly bold statement that might piss some people off. I don't think that's artistry.
No, it gets into a weird other thing. Right. You
that's
know
like,
what I mean?
Like it's you're not an artist if you're doing paint by numbers.
Right.
That might be really therapeutic for you and
fun,
but it's not art.
Right, right.
It's like it's truly that is a craft project. That's not the same thing. Like okay, I'm gonna do this exact same thing the exact same way. Like dude. Just give me like 10%
of this
of openness to just try things.
Yes.
And I swear I'm going to have a better time. You'll have a better time. And the people listening are going to have a better time too.
From the fans' perspective, it's so interesting because you get something you not everyone's going to have, right? So you may have a show that, you know, went a certain way, but the other people may have it go completely different.
Right.
So you get something different than you would on a record or even at the last show. It's like, oh, this is unique to my experience watching this artist. It's like, this happened tonight. It may not never happen again.
Yeah.
It's like that adds to the allure of the live show where it's like, if it's stamped out, it's like song 3 minutes, 13 seconds, boom, we go to the next one. It's the same thing. It's like, oh, we could just listen to the record. You want a little
Why am I paying to come?
Right. You know, it's like to take a picture and listen to, you know, it's like it's a little bit more than that. You
right.
know? Or should be at least.
I think so. I think we're getting back to that.
Oh, it's coming back.
There was like a 10-year period where everyone was just like,
a lot of bro country.
Perfect. Like, oh yeah, you know how boring perfect is?
Exactly.
I have fought for just like very minimal editing in my parts, even in like Prague.
Yeah.
I'm like playing like genty stuff with a lot. I'm like, you can, you'll hear it when the second record comes out with Fly Information. You can hear little spots where I'm like, I'm not perfect. Like, yeah. It's very, like, I hear them clear as day. Right. But to me, I'm like, I want to play it better, but I don't want to fake that.
No.
Like, I want to have, like, I want it to sound like a human being played
right.
it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, here, that's all of my favorite recordings were, like, by humans.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%. All of them. 100% of them were.
100%, so, yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that, because back to the Sturgeman piece that I recorded, which I learned, I mean, it's a note-for-note transcription, so, yeah. Like, in that sense, I wanted it to be perfect. There were plenty of imperfections that I could have easily redone. I was like, no, this is part of the whole experience.
Yeah.
And, like, this was fun, and this is me on it, and it doesn't have to be exactly perfect.
And it's fantastic. It sounds awesome. You killed it.
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way, he was talking about it.
You gave me that final push.
I just got to say, I just want to give big ups to this guy, because I challenged him to do it. He's like, yeah, maybe, you know, someday I want to do this. Yeah. He's like, do it now.
Yeah.
And he was
like that.
Okay. And it was literally within the month, he was like, I've booked the day in the studio and I'm going in to do, like,
I love that.
And I was like, yes, this is so cool.
Well, you gave me the Tim Ferriss advice, right? The story. Imagine, like, you have to donate to, like, your worst charity for every week.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good.
I'm paraphrasing it weirdly.
Yeah, He said, well, basically, if you don't meet your goal, you give your most brutal friend a check made out to an organization that you hate in your name, and if you don't meet your goal, they give them that check. So, like, oh, so I've donated to, like, whatever, like the Ku Klux Klan or something. I don't want to do that.
Right.
So I'm going to get the thing done. Like, find your friend that do that. Like, I will give them your money. And I was like, I basically pushed him like that. I forgot that I didn't go that extreme,
but like you said, I booked the studio time before I was even done learning the piece.
Yes.
That was scary, but I was like, well, now I have to learn it.
Right. And then you freaked it out.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, I'm sharing this
right
now.
Thanks so much, man. Yeah, absolutely. You're one of the first people to
As soon as I saw it, I was like, because, you know, once again, with social media, you're so inundated with content, right?
Yes.
But I saw that and I was like, ooh.
Well, this is something different.
Yeah, I was like, this is nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like, I know how much time that takes to learn that, you know? And within every part of that song, there's probably 8 hours of lessons. You know what I mean? Because I was listening to, I was like, there's so much technique that goes into that, so much learning that goes into that. So you probably put a ton of hours, man.
It took years, honestly.
Yeah. So it's impressive. And I was like, this is well worth, you know.
Appreciate it.
Well worth people seeing.
Yeah.
You need to, man.
I won't stop talking about it. So I'll make clips and shit and annoy people with it still.
No, that's great, man.
Just go. If you haven't watched it, just go.
Go to
Dan's page right now. Pause the podcast. Just go. And watch it.
Well, go watch Todd's original video, because I kind of did it to pay
maybe homage
get, to him.
Maybe you'll get a couple fill-ins, you know?
Maybe.
Hey.
Who knows, man.
Maybe.
That'd be a fun fill-in
That'd
gig.
Be crazy.
On his kit, too.
Oh, my gosh. Oh my
yeah, so let's go there. I want to talk gear, because back to even that. So the gong drum was a big part of that setup for the Sturgeman piece. So you have, it is a gong drum, right? Or is it?
Yeah.
Because that Pearl, we just put out a frame drum. It's basically like a thin, kind of almost like a pancake drum.
Yeah.
But yeah, was that like an intentional thing to just make something different, or how does that play into the set?
So I originally had a 13-inch, 16, and an 18. And I like the 18, but I wanted something almost like a sub drop, but organic.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me try this gong drum. So I put a E-mat on it, right? Something real thick, and just was like, I'm going to try to make this sound like a kick. And then I'll use it strategically. Like, if I want a big impact at the show, I'll use it at that part.
Yeah.
So it almost feels like, whoa, what just happened? You know, like, we're kind of sounding the alarm here. It's like, this is a big sounding thing.
And it just looks cool.
And like, it's just visually, fun to hit.
That's what people, especially
going back to the visual aspect of a live show, it's like kind of nice to have some intrigue visually when you're looking at a stage. It's like, oh, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder what it's going to sound like when he hits it. You know, you kind of want a little bit of that going on.
Back to like blending like the analog and digital, or like the more traditional rock show versus like Ableton, but having the gong drum, or you could replicate that on an SPD-SX.
Right.
What's going to look cooler?
Yeah.
Give me the big drum.
And sometimes what's going to feel better too, because there's a dynamic range too with the gong drum that you can't replicate with the pad, you know?
Right.
You know, and this is the first year, because I had always used a pad, and this is the first year I've actually moved, but weirdly enough, I feel like I'm turning over a new leaf, because I used to have pads for you know, all the sampled sounds. Now I'm just trying to recreate it on the kit. Mm. So if it's a snap or a clap, I may just use a rim shot with hi-hat. I'm just trying to get a little bit more, only because the more I watch live shows, the more I appreciate when a drummer does that or a live band. Maybe I'm partial, but I just enjoy hearing and seeing the instrument happen, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if I can hear that snap of the rim shot and also see it, there's something about it that my brain really likes.
Yeah, that's you know? A good point.
So
yeah.
I wonder if that's a thing with all people or not, but
yeah. I interrupted you.
No, it's my point was a pittance in comparison to the point you're making. We'll move on immediately.
Okay. So yeah, gear wise, what are you rocking? Is that DW kit?
So this year, I was using a Ludwig, and this is the first year Jeff Berrios of Truth Custom Drums is making me a Truth Custom Drums for next year.
Nice.
Yeah, and then Zildjian cymbals. So I like the Zildjian ones. I've tried so many cymbals, and I like they're all so good, man. At the top level, you know, like Zildjian, Sabian, Picea, like all the cymbals are very good. Minel.
He was asking are those 15
inches? One of my good buddy. Yeah. He plays for Bailey Zimmerman. He uses Minel, and they sound. So yeah, plug for Minel, but also, yeah, Truth Custom Drums. So he's making me a beautiful kit. It's going to be 13-inch maple, 16-inch, and then he's going to do the gong drum, but he's going to match it to the kit and make it.
Let's go.
He's going to do a little deeper too. We're going to try a little deeper, just see how it sounds. Yeah,
dude, I'm so stoked.
I'll get a little more beef.
Can you share the finish, or is that a surprise?
It's going to be gold. It's going to be black sparkle with gold hardware. Yeah, it's going to be nice. Oh, is that in your realm?
Oh, that I love that.
Yeah.
That just,
I've always gone with colorful with drum kits. I'm going to try to go with more like streamlined, like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm going to try black.
Well, the gold hardware, though, that's the
icing on the cake.
Yeah, because the black, it's classic. It's beautiful as long as it's clean and no bunch of fingerprints are on it. But the sparkle will help hide fingerprints.
Yes, glossiness.
Oh, beautiful. And the gold hardware, chef's kiss.
I know. I'm excited.
Yeah,
dude, I'm excited.
Awesome.
December 15th, he's bringing it down. So that's when I'll finally see it. So I'm very pumped for that.
Can't wait.
There's nothing, man, that's the thing. And they're bringing it back to the visual aspect. If you're a person that bucks at the idea of the performance needing to have this visual thing, like if as a drummer, do you look at a certain drum kit and think that drum kit looks good to me? And do you look at another drum kit and think that drum kit looks dumb to me? Because I do. I'm like, I'll look at a drum kit and go, I'm like, it's not as pleasing. There's of course an aesthetic that you are going to enjoy.
Yes.
Just like anybody else, just like anything else. Just go ahead and lean into that a little bit.
Lean into it.
You want to find? Why don't you go and find a drum kit that you think is gorgeous that you want to play on?
Yes.
Maybe it inspires. Just looking at it inspires you.
Mm-hmm.
Every element of it can inspire. The sound inspires you.
Yeah.
The
smell.
The smell of that.
When you
glue.
Take the head off and you finally smell that, you're like, wow, that's nice.
Maybe
know?
Every single piece can inspire you. Maybe every single piece of the instrument can be part of your artistry. Imagine that.
I love that.
They really like drums.
That's
Yeah.
Hey, I get it, man. There's something about it.
I love it.
Just saying.
Does Nate Smith, does he, you said he doesn't play drums, but is there any moments in the show where he'll come up and like hit the cymbals or have fun with you?
He does. He plays piano pretty
Tickle
well.
Fight.
He does. He'll do a little keys thing. Yeah. But I keep him away from the drums.
I'm thinking like Luke Combs and Jake, they have that dynamic.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah. We actually had Aaron, I feel like I'm butchering his last name. Gillespie.
Sterling. Okay.
No, the...
Oh, Gillespie?
Gillespie. Yeah. I always want to say Gillespie. It's Gillespie. Yeah. Monster drummer. He actually came out with us 2 weekends ago and played my kit for one of the songs.
Oh, wow.
Awesome, right?
That's
my drums
wild.
Were screaming.
Yeah.
I could just see them. But yeah, it was one of the coolest moments that I've had watching him play. But
yeah.
that was the only other person that's played the drums. Nate really has never played it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was fun to have him out. He was cool. He was awesome. He was a good hang too.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Man, so who are some other drummer inspirations? Either current or current guys that maybe you're on tour with, or just older drummers.
I've been on a weird Sterling kick. So Aaron Sterling, for some reason, I just am so hooked on his style. He is my gold standard for like what I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he is the weird
combination of like. Great technique, and he can do so many things on the drums, but he is so musical.
Yes.
And he has a sound where I could close my eyes and hear a clip of him playing and be like, That's
Aaron.
Yeah, like, he so is unmistakable. Yeah. And I feel like most drummers could probably say that about him, right?
Yes.
And even through the iPhone, I swear his drums sound better than any other.
Oh, yeah.
He like, just kn- that's he the knows, thing. He knows how to get the Aaron sound out of the drums. And part of it is how he's miking. Part of it is how he's tuning in everything. And the other part is literally how he is hitting the drums.
How he's playing them.
And his feel is recognizable. He's got gobs of identity.
We'll have him on. I want to talk to him about his technique. Like he does play different than I've seen most drummers. Have you noticed that?
He does have an odd approach to it. You know, it's one of those things where visually you're looking at it, you're almost just entranced by the way he plays it.
Yeah.
When you listen, it's like, whoa.
I think that translates into the sound.
My very favorite Sterling video is, and if we ever have him on here, which I really hope we do.
You will.
We will. We're going to have him
you
on.
You will. Yeah. We're manifesting.
We're going to have it on.
He may not have responded to our DM, but if he hears this, please message
us. He's coming.
It's, I believe he titled it The Power of the 16th Note. It was him playing to Back in Black, playing one 16th note off, and it rips.
Really?
The feel, the pocket is ridiculous.
I'll pull it up. You got to send that
after, to me. When we're done, we'll listen to it together.
Okay.
It's everybody, just go ahead, Google Aaron Sterling 16th note. It'll pull up this Back in Black video on his Instagram. And oh my God, it's so good. And
then
he did another one after that, which was he did Tom Sawyer.
Oh, okay.
And he actually, like, as he starts playing, like, it comes in, and you can tell that he's got the click in his ears on the other 16th note because he starts laughing.
Yeah.
He just, like, the song starts, he's like, this is dumb. But actually, then the chorus then ends up sounding like a Latin groove.
Whoa,
it's really
okay,
weird.
I'm curious now.
Yeah, we'll watch a couple videos.
But yeah, he's so good.
He's fantastic.
So good. Sometimes he plays things, and I'm like, how did you even think of that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like such an odd, but very musical approach to it. Yeah. Very good.
He's so musical.
And that's that thing, which I want to give to like all the Nashville cats, because I feel like there are a lot of people here who are afraid to try something that has a little bit of their stamp on it. Like, well, I got to kind of like play it the most like the next guy. Like, man, the dudes at the very top all like they have a sound. All of them do.
Yeah.
Like
all of them.
If you're just only trying to play it, be the best facsimile of the thing, you'll never do it.
You're right.
You got to have a little bit that says, Mike, oh, dude, that sounds like Neil.
Yeah.
That sounds like Dan. That sounds like Nate.
Right.
I want that sound. You have to have at least a little bit of that. You can go as far into that if you want to be real bold and be like, I'm going all the way in. Yeah. I'm going to sound only like me, motherfucker.
Right.
If you're going to hire me, it's going to sound, know what you're getting.
Like Nathan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, and there are people who do that and make a whole career out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And there is nothing wrong with that. That's awesome too.
Oh, he's made a great career off of sounding like Aaron Sterling.
I'll yes.
Yes. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's great advice.
For Aaron, but anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, one of my favorites too. Growing up, I had such a hodgepodge of drummers. Like I went through weird phases, but really like John Blackwell when I was growing up. I know kind of a little more obscure one, but I really liked his style. Yeah, I feel like I watched him the most of anyone. Something about the way he played, I was like, this is how I want to sound. You know,
dude, I'll never forget it. I was at NAMM, my first ever NAMM show. And it was a Tama like 40th anniversary event. They like booked like, I think Pridgen, it was like
Thomas Pridgen,
six drummers in a room. They all just
it was
did
Bruner.
Solos. Was it?
Bruner.
Probably. Oh, I was kind of young, but
yeah.
I happened to just be right in front of John Blackwell for his solo.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know who the guy was. And I was like,
whoa. Dude.
It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, tragic that he passed. So
yeah, it was sad, man. It was in a bad, sad way, too. But he'll be a legend, at least in my book, you know, and I'm sure for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I had actually had that DVD.
You know which one I'm talking about?
I absolutely
It was great, wasn't it?
It was, and I lost it. I don't know what I did with it.
Oh, no,
That's, I did watch that a bunch.
Yeah, I wore that thing.
He, Again, tons of identity, gobs and gobs of flash.
He did have some flash. Yeah. I kind of used some of his, like, I'll do that basic stick trick that he used, and I love that.
I can remember the triplet things he would do, like digga digga digga.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did have that. The single hand triplet. Yeah,
exactly,
yeah. And he would do that with single kick, too.
Yep.
You know, that was also impressive. Great accuracy and dynamic control with that single kick.
Yep. Great foot.
Great foot, yeah. And he did it in dress shoes. Which is even.
What?
Yeah, I know. I tried to play in them once. I was like, I can't do this. I need tennis shoes. So That's crazy. Mad respect for that as well.
Yeah. John, Aaron. Who else? Give me one
more. That's a good list.
Give me one more. Because you said such a hodgepodge.
That's such a hodgepodge. And then I also went through a big like punk rock phase.
Yes.
I like Longidu Parsons. Do you know who that is? The guy for Yellow Card?
Yellow Card.
He was one of my favorites.
Was he the original?
Hey, real quick. Yellow Card. Why the fuck? Is he not playing for Yellow Card anymore?
Yeah, he was one of my favorites growing up. He was one of those guys that also had gobs of identity in a weird realm of like punk rock.
Dude, like when you listen, freaking go listen to Ocean Avenue. The dude, like he's playing. Like that song is like very drums forward.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Very much like a Blink 182 song. Like it would be very not the same song without the drums.
Right.
You know?
Like perfect example.
Yeah.
Perfect. Like you hear whatever you think of Travis Barker, it doesn't matter. When you hear him play in Blink, it was night and day from the original drummer's name was Scott, right?
Right.
From Scott to Travis, night and day difference.
Night and day?
Yeah. One of them, like Scott was good and solid, but when Travis played, you're like, this sounds like this is very, very, very specific.
It is. It's very niche, you know, and it's his sound, like we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
Once again, top of the food chain, like that kind of does lend itself to that top of the food chain.
Right.
Identity. Maybe that's the title of this podcast.
Maybe it is.
But yeah, no, he is one of my favorites. So in like a weird mix of drummers, but yeah, you can see the difference between those three guys. But anybody that I feel like is just good at what they do, I enjoy watching. You know, so I feel like I've learned from so many, even guys that are my peers. It's like I've learned so much from just watching Instagram videos. There's so much to be taken from anybody, you know? And sometimes things to not do or things that I'd be like, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
Like there's a lot of that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, what's the last thing you learned not to do?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Without naming a name.
Okay. Sometimes, maybe I shouldn't even go because this may be too specific. Okay, sometimes over, like with the movements on stage, maybe getting up and going away from your drums too. Mm-hmm. I think I'm more of a stationary guy. I like to be behind the drums. Once you start getting out and start hitting other things, you know, that's when I'm like, okay, that's the show has ended for me there.
Hmm.
So I stay behind the drums. Even if I stand up a little bit when I play, I'm still in that same realm.
Yeah.
Once I leave behind go away from the kick drum and the seat, it's like, okay, now you need to rein me back in.
Yeah.
So that would be the one not thing to do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And we won't single anybody out, but.
Stay back there. Be in your cage.
Be in your cage.
This isn't your home show. Stay.
Right. Let's start with the Nashville specific food question.
Okay. I'm ready.
Favorite places to grab a bite?
I like Deg Thai. You guys ever been there?
But I love Thai.
You guys like Thai food?
You've never been there. My wife is Hmong, and she makes the shit out of some Thai food.
You know, if there's nothing else I gave you guys today, that's it. Deg Thai is great.
Okay.
Get Jay's special.
Okay.
Or the red curry. There you go.
Bro, it's going in the notes.
It's going in the notes.
Here we go.
And then you can message me back with the review, but you'll like it. I can guarantee you that.
How do you spell Deg?
Deg Thai. So it's, I think it's D-E-G and then Thai.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm excited to try it.
You will.
One thing you've learned from tour that you'd like to share.
Ooh.
If you had to pick one.
Okay, let's go non-drumming related because you'll probably get a ton of good drumming advice on this podcast. I'm going to say if you are on a bus, be somewhat clean, be somewhat organized, not for your own sake, but for everyone else's sake.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one little piece of advice. That's what I would give.
Great.
And that'll help for the overall community and probably the long-term stability of your job.
It'll make the people around you hate you less.
Hate you less.
Yeah. Yes.
Great. Yes.
Yes.
You know, you'll get a lot of good drumming advice, so I'll give you something that's a little non-drumming related.
Yeah.
That's great. Here's my Tim Ferriss stolen question that I love to ask.
Okay.
Favorite purchase in the last year? under $100.
Ooh, under $100. Because I was gonna say the Zildjian paper thin symbol I just got.
Yeah,
okay, but I'll still take that. But
under $100. That's a great. I got this. Okay, so actually I do. I got the FabFilter plugin. It's a FabFilter EQ. That may have been my favorite purchase. It was Black Friday. So
I was gonna say, yeah.
Yeah. Normally, Black Friday. Yeah, it's a pricey one.
It's crazy to be like normally $900. Like, yeah, it's $7. What?
Yeah, it's like,
so it could have been a lot cheaper this whole time.
Oh yeah. So that may have been my best purchase. Yeah.
Okay. Love it.
Okay.
Love it.
Sweet.
Where do you want people to find you?
Let's just try Instagram. Like if you want to find my personal Instagram, just Neil Jakobin Drums on Instagram.
And then,
simple.
TourLaunchNashville.com.
That's another one.
And then
yes.
TourLaunch on Instagram.
Correct. Tour Launch LLC. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, dude, can't wait to follow your journey and stoked for next year with Nate and onwards and upwards.
Boys, thanks for having me on. This has been fun. So I'm glad we finally got this scheduled.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Nashville Drummers Podcast. If you've enjoyed these podcasts, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you can help support this dream and keep the ball rolling for us. Believe it or not, it's not free or even necessarily cheap for us to make this thing go. To sign up, go to patreon.com/Nashville Drummers Podcast or click the link in our Instagram bio. All of your help is greatly appreciated.
Check out our new website, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. And if you're not already following us on Instagram, you can follow us at Nashville Drummers Podcast.
This episode was recorded at Diamond Sound Studios located in Nashville, Tennessee.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.